Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 2nd, 2014, our show right before Election Day 2014. And joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcoming for the first time from Florida, Mr. Bernard Jennings.
Good evening. Happy South Florida Day to you.
Yes. Apologize again for that. Now, Bernard, you have had a varied political background, both in consulting and on the radio. Tell the listeners a little about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Bernard Jennings. I'm a former executive director of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party under the leadership of Charles Dussault, who was chairman of the party several years back. I worked with many candidates throughout the county. I run now my own political consulting firm, IKJ Consulting. We provide automated phone dialing services throughout the country at robophonecalls.com for candidates running for public office. We do those harassing or entertaining phone calls that interrupt your dinner service so you can know what's going on in the political arena. Prior to that, I had a radio talk show called Financially and Politically Yours with a Republican counterpart where we served as pundits like we're doing now, talking about the different races and candidacies of candidates throughout South Florida over the last couple election cycles. I'm happy to be on the show. I appreciate you inviting me so we can talk about some of the things that are affecting South Florida on the air.
Oh, yeah, and the fact that you're in Florida helps a lot because, I mean, it's such a big state in the South and one of the most politically important as far as the swing of almost any election across the country. You were talking about robocalls and how they affect our lives. I will say I have yet to vote. I went ahead and I purposely decided to vote on Election Day just because my polling place is 5 minutes up the road. Going to vote early is about 20 minutes the other way, and it's just going to be more convenient to vote on Election Day, which is strange to say. But that means that I would still be on the universe that could be robocalled. I have yet to be. Now I've gotten a lot of direct mail, and of course I've seen a lot of TV ads. I don't think there's any way you can avoid those unless you just don't watch TV. But I hadn't got any robocalls. Now I'm a white male that votes very Democratic, but then everything else demographically looks like a Republican in Georgia. Any idea why I wouldn't be getting any robocalls?
Well, let me ask you a question. Are you on the do not call list? Because if you you won't get robocalls because the idea is if you don't want to get an automated phone call from anything, the law is created to prohibit persons from being harassed. And the people who created the laws are the politicians in it. And in the law, it says if you're a nonprofit or a political campaign or a political candidate, you're exempt from the do not call list. But the notion is that if someone doesn't want to be called, we're going to scrub you from the list before we call out if you're going to do not call it. So that's probably why you're not getting a call.
Yeah, well, and actually I have a cell phone. I mean, I'm one of those cell phone-only households. I guess that's one thing that makes me look a little more Democratic than everything else about myself, other than my voting record, which should be everything. But I do, we got rid of the landline a good 4 years ago. Catherine, have you been getting the robocalls?
I believe I have been getting robocalls because I have a landline. I do not answer my landline. The only person that has my landline phone number is my brother. Only person who I have given it to is my brother. And so when I see a call coming from the international code where he lives, I answer it. But other than that, I don't answer it. But I know that it's a Comcast landline number, and so Comcast has given it or sold it or however to the van, so it's in the van. But I don't. I mean, I'm sure I get calls on it, but I just don't answer them.
Yeah, I tell you, I politicians, if you're listening to this, and I think we have a few that do, feel free to call me over the next 2 days if you can get that stupid cruise line out of Alabama to quit calling me. Because I live on the Georgia-Alabama line, I'm duped into taking it, thinking, well, I know some people in Alabama, and it's always this lady from the freaking cruise line that I don't want to talk to. So if you can get that to stop, I'd be glad to take your calls. Well, Bernard, we didn't just want to talk to you about robocalls, even though you probably are an expert, and if we need an expert on robocalls, we're going to remember that too. But you're down there in Florida, and go ahead.
We do polls and everything. We do political polling and robocalls for business and political campaigns.
Oh, yeah. So, well, of course, that makes sense. You can do, when you have that call center mechanism, you can do polls as well. So that makes perfect sense. We might have to get into some of that if you've polled some races. But first off, since you're down there in Florida, you have maybe the most important governor's race nationally because it's the biggest state that, you know, could go either way. Former Governor Charlie Crist, now a Democrat, running against current Governor Rick Scott, a Republican. And, of course, Rick Scott had been seen as very unpopular throughout his term, but apparently he's gotten his popularity up enough in the 40s that this thing could go either way. How do you see it?
Well, we have, like you said, Charlie Crist, who's a longtime Republican independent Democrat, who... no
I like that.
he's a change agent, so he goes with the flow of what needs to be expedient so that he can get his message out. And right now he's running as a Democrat, and he's been supported by the Democratic Party. So if the party wants to support him as the gubernatorial candidate, then so be it. Who is anyone else to say that they shouldn't, right? And then we have Rick Scott, favorable and unfavorable in many lights for many different reasons, that is the sitting governor, who is being challenged by Charlie Crist. They're in a heated campaign, neck and neck. I think it's the latest polls, 44-44, with one of the third-party candidates getting 8% or 4% of margin of error, meaning that, you know, just like we look back to the Al Gore campaign where he supposedly lost by 200 votes, that's one small condo someplace in South Florida, would have swung that presidential election. That's probably what's going to happen here in the governor's race.
Yeah. Well, that's it's going to be obviously something interesting to see. You mentioned polling. The latest poll I saw is both candidates were in the 40s. It was within the margin of error. What kind of polling have you been seeing on that race?
Here it's been a poll of 44% for either side in any given poll. So it's really hard to tell, you know, who is going to be the victor. It just comes down to election day. You know, we've had 2 weeks of early voting here in South Florida, and, you know, we've had an increase in the attendance at the early polling precincts as compared to the past primaries, which was on the 26th of last month, of August, I should say. And here we've had an increase of maybe 400 to 700 to 1,000 persons per day voting, meaning that, you know, on election day, if we have a big turnout, there's going to be long lines. If it rains, you know, that poses a problem for people going out to vote. Usually when it's raining, people don't like to go vote here in South Florida. They stay home, and especially some areas where it's a little bit of flooding. But throughout the state, if there's a good weather, then you're going to see long lines, and anything good and bad originates in Florida, particularly Miami, Florida, in the world. Any crisis that happens anywhere, it's in Florida. In Miami, it originates. So I think this will be a turning point campaign for the whole country based upon who wins this election. There's some very big differences between the two candidates that although they're both, you know, history from the same party as they come out of the starting blocks now, there's some diverse changes from policy decisions of Crist, who is actually a former governor of Florida compared to Rick Scott.
Yes. Well, of course, Catherine's on the show with us, and I want to give Catherine a chance to ask some questions. Questions you have for Bernard on the Florida governor's race?
I have a couple things. So it's a winner takes all, right? It doesn't. They don't have to get 50% plus one.
No, it's a popular vote. Whoever gets the most votes wins this.
Okay. You're lucky. We have a 50% plus one here in Georgia, and it's can create a huge headache. And do you think that the independent is pulling votes from Crist or from Scott, or is it about even? Is it an independent candidate or a libertarian? Or
I believe there's about 20-something candidates.
Oh, really?
In the governor's race, it's a whole bunch of different parties, and the closest one is by the name of Welch, and the last poll showed that they were getting 8%. But I think those are frustrating votes. Those are people who are just tired of politics as usual and swinging their votes and look at the personal relations of these individuals that are voting for these other in these other races. You know, sometimes folks run for office, not just the governor's race, other races, they know they can't win, but they set out to put their message out, maybe raise some money to do some things within their message deliverance. I don't see that they're going to have a bearing on this governor's race, those other candidates. I don't think they're going to get enough votes to make a difference. But any vote that is cast for anyone other than Charlie Crist and Rick Scott is a vote of frustration and probably the whole scheme of things.
Right. And you can't. You don't know if it's pulling from one or the other. Or it's about equivalent, you think?
No, I think it's equivalent. And
okay.
The commercials that are on TV in regards to these races, and even the congressional races, are dog eat dog. I mean, I haven't seen political ads, negative ads, campaigning from both sides in years like this. I'm on Facebook or I'm in. On the internet, I'm on the app on my telephone. I play a game called Words for Friends on my cell phone once in a while. I check out of reality and I pull my game up, Words for Friends. And when I execute a word and get my 24 points, an ad pops up. And sure enough, it's an ad either for Charlie Crist or against Rick Scott. And it's not a nice ad. It's like really ugly, So.
Oh, we've had our fair share of that too here in Georgia. So. Unfortunately, that negative campaigning works. I don't understand it, but there's certainly a lot of evidence that it does work. So
it does work, along with robocalls, robophonecalls.com. That's a shameless plug because we realize that when we do robocalls in the primaries, 99% of the candidates that we assisted with robocalls, they won their election without a runoff. And I think it's something that right now, because the advent of Facebook, Twitter, and texting, it's been impersonal to use robocalls in the past. Right now, a robocall is actually someone's voice. You get to hear someone talk. And so it makes it a little bit different. But there's phone calls going off, not only from my firm, but other firms throughout the state in regards to local issues as well as this governor's campaign. It's crazy. We also have that marijuana issue, medical marijuana issue on the ballot for the entire state to approve the use of medical marijuana in centers throughout the state where persons who are suffering from glaucoma, HIV, or other painful ailments, that they can have an option to use medical marijuana legally with a prescription from the medical doctor or caregiver. And it's controversial because you have the campaigns on the other side saying, hey, it's a farce. Anybody can get the marijuana. They won't need a prescription. But that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, has there been any polling on that?
Yes, we did some polling on that. We show that'll win 64%. We'll see what happens. On the street, as you talk to people, if you're traveling and talk to people, pretty much everybody says, yeah, they're going to vote for it. I think right now, everyone is less than 6 degrees of separation from someone who suffered from cancer. And
right.
the word is that if you're suffering from cancer, actually, I do have a friend, a close friend, that had another close friend of theirs pass a weekend ago. and I met them probably about a month ago before they passed. And they had a prescription, I don't know where they got it from, for liquid drops, which was a derivative of marijuana, that they were taking these drops, and they were telling to me personally that, you know, those drops really helped them to feel more comfortable. And they took out the hallucinogen that's in the marijuana was removed from the drops they were taking, so they were cognizant while taking this medicine that really helped them. I think that's what the gist of it for the others that are voting for the initiative.
That's all I've got, David. For the governor's race.
Yeah, well, back to that governor's race. Scott was so unpopular. Is this something where he's raised his popularity up, or is it just that there was a certain segment of Republicans that, like, I don't like this guy, but he's our guy, so I'm going to go back to him and vote for him, even though I don't like him. What do you see?
Well, with the Republicans, I mean, I don't think they've ever abandoned Scott. He's been their man, and he continues to be. Now, Charlie Crist, on the other hand, having started off as a Republican, what happened with Charlie Crist, that he was a Republican, but he lost a race for the Senate, the U.S. Senate seat here in Florida, against a gentleman by the name of Marco Rubio, who was the sitting senator, and that contested seat in 2010 came about, and then Charlie Crist switched parties to become an independent, and he ran, and he lost in the 2012 Democratic election against Rick Scott, and now he jumped back in this time, Crist has, and he's running against Rick Scott, who's a sitting Republican. Their backgrounds are both attorneys. Charlie Crist he's not married, doesn't have children. Rick Scott does. Rick Scott is an attorney, and he's a businessman. He was the leader of an insurance company that had some problems right when Rick Scott left the company. They were indicted by the federal government and ended up paying a $600 million, fine. And there was an agreement that they admitted to no wrongdoing, but it built Medicare out of millions of dollars that, could have... I'm not sure if you know this,
yeah.
Rick Scott. He's supposedly worth well over $200 million as a governor. He spent a lot of money in his own campaign. In his last campaign when he ran, I don't believe he accepted any money. He funded his own campaign to the tune of millions and millions of dollars and to win the election. And his finances, he alleges now, are in a trust, a blind trust, where he doesn't have anything to do with how he earns money. So when he's in or out of office, he'll learn how much money he has in his holdings. And right now we don't know, but Charlie Crist and him differ on a number of things as far as their policy. Rick Scott believes in a flat tax, although he hasn't done anything to bring that forward. And Charlie Crist, when he was governor, helped to cut property taxes and save taxpayers $1 billion over each year while he was in office, and that's a big difference for the state. In regards to stimulus spending, Chris supported the 2008 stimulus bill enacted by President George W. Bush, and that same bill, President Obama continued that stimulus package. Scott denounced that stimulus package and refused to accept the money for the state of Florida, and then later on accepted the money, but still, denounced it publicly. As far as regulation goes, Charlie Crist supports less government because of his Republican background. He has extended his position to issues such as gay marriage, drugs, legalization, and medical marijuana. He supports medical marijuana and abortion. Scott, he supported the U.S. House Republican cut cap and balance plan, which was the bill that was sought to cut government spending and cap future spending and balance the federal budget. So, clearly Charlie Crist has opened up to be more inclusive, where Scott is more more restrictive on financial regulatory matters. Social Security, Chris, has spoken out against raising the retirement age, against cutting cost of living increases for the elderly. He believes more that the federal government can save money by focusing on cleaning up waste and fraud within the Social Security system and save money that way, whereas Rick Scott has opted to, you know, have more of a focus on privatization of Social Security, and he doesn't seem to want to make any major policy moves or anything in regards to Social Security, and he wants to require that welfare recipients take drug tests and qualify for the benefit, which is, you know, very controversial if you're a Democrat. As far as investing in our investment and infrastructure, the state's infrastructure needs a Charlie Crist believes that the state's infrastructure needs a boost, and he promised to invest funds in equipping our roads, the ports, high-speed rail, and the transit system in general. And he also talks about expanding the Space Coast, where NASA and the aerospace engineering projects have been cut in the past under the Scott administration. As you know, most of that has been privatized. Rick Scott rejected federal funds for the nation's highest speed rail line that was supposed to go through the state from way down here in South Florida up the coast to mid Florida, and you know, most municipalities, most counties had voted yes to that high speed rail, and then when Rick Scott became governor, he said no, he wasn't going to accept federal funds for that, and that was, that stuff was canned. Healthcare policy, Chris. You want me to go on more things, or?
Well, do healthcare, and then we'll get a final prediction on this one from you.
Okay. Well, Charlie Crist is a supporter of President Barack Obama's Affordable Health Care Act, Obamacare, as the governor of Florida. He once floated a plan to offer $150 per month health plans to ensure that nearly 4 million of Florida's uninsured would have been covered. Rick Scott, Vietnamese, opposes government intervention in health care and has joined with other states in suing the federal government over the implementation of Obamacare. Scott has stated that he believes that free market should be the only marketplace for health care, and government has no business in that.
Bernard, go ahead and give us your, you know, prediction. Who's going to win this race on Election Day?
My prediction is that it's going to come down to the wire on Election Day, and it's going to come down to a few thousand votes here and there. That's going to pick us over the top, and then we're going to have a change at the governor's mansion in Tallahassee, and Charlie Crist will be the next 46th governor of the state of Florida.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, I guess you and I are going to do our predictions later on all the rest of the races, but I guess we should get Florida done now. I see this as one of the few truly bright spots for the South on Election Day. I, too, think Governor Crist will become governor again, retake the governor's mansion for the Democratic Party, and it'll be one of the few outright wins on Tuesday. Catherine, what do you think?
I agree. I think that Crist is going to take it on election night. Well, there's no problem. There's no... I think it's going to be a late night, though. I think Bernard has a good point. I think it's going to be, you know, a few, you know, small number of votes, and it's going to be scattered around the state, so we're going to be waiting for results to come in for that election to be called. But I think Charlie takes it.
Yeah.
I think Scott, I think it comes down to, a lot of it comes down to likability, and I think people know Charlie Crist, even though they might be, you know, some people are uncomfortable with party switchers, but I think that he has a good reputation as a when he was governor, and I think that Scott is just kind of unlikable.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this comes down to that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, and people also, I think people don't mind party switchers as much when they say, hey, you finally came around and agreed with me. That's why a lot of the Democrats are willing to support him, because it's like, hey, you're now with us. Bernard, while we get you on the phone, we know there's not many districts that are really swingable anywhere anymore, but I did hear that Florida had a district or two that could possibly change. What congressional races are you really watching?
Well, we have the head of the Democratic National Committee, who is W. Wasserman Schultz, District 23, and she's facing an opponent, a Republican, Joe Kaufman, and that's been a very testy race. There, you know, I haven't seen a lot of TV ads on that, but I believe Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's a very likable person. She's a staunch advocate of women's rights, and she's an advocate for education, advocate for health care for Floridians throughout the state, not just in her district. I think she'll prevail in this election on Tuesday, and I believe the next one is probably District 26. And excuse me, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that district is Northern Dade and Southern Broward, and the next one is District 26, which is Southern Dade down into Monroe County, down to the Lower Keys. We have Joe Garcia, who's a sitting Democrat, and Joe Garcia, he ran for office a couple times and then finally made it into the office. He's a nice guy. He's got some issues in his campaign where a past campaign worker of his got into some trouble with some election accusations of election fraud, not in relation to Joe Garcia, but he has the same last name as Joe Garcia, so those ads try to tie it into Joe Garcia because he used to work for him. But he's faced by a challenger, a guy named Carlos Cabrero, who was a former school board member, Republican, that flip-flopped on a lot of issues, and they called him out on a lot of commercials where he's vehemently supported some ideas that are out there, and then now that he's running as a Republican, he's saying that he doesn't, but yet they were able to show side-by-side commercial clips of his own words, you know, putting his foot in his mouth. So I think those may do him in, and he'll be sitting out as a member of Congress over the next 4 years. And Joe Garcia will prevail in that race on Tuesday.
All right. Well, Bernard, we really enjoyed having you on the show, and next time we need somebody from Florida, we're going to call back on you. But if you need any robocall needs or any automated polling needs, look up Bernard Jennings.
Yeah, robophonecalls.com makes it easier, robophonecalls.com. And we're not limited to just Florida calls. We can do calls throughout the whole country. So we're happy to influence any election anywhere. Just give us a call.
Thanks,
Bernard.
All
right, thanks again for your information.
Great. Nice being on the show.
Yeah, good to have you. Okay, again, that was Bernard Jennings from Florida. And, Catherine, we got about half a show left, and that's fine because we're going to stick and move. We've talked about these races for months now, some of them almost a year. And so we're going to just hit the highlights. And alphabetical, we're going to start with an easy one, I think. Alabama governor. I believe there's a Senate race, too, but I don't even know if there's a Democrat in the race. You can predict that one, too. But I know on the governor's side, there is a Democrat running. What about Alabama?
I unfortunately have to call that for the Republican. I want to just talk for a second about how I made my calls. I looked at a couple of different things, as well as, you know, polling and a lot of, you know, editorial stuff. But I also just looked at rankings of unemployment rates, and I also looked at early voting rules, early voting and absentee voting rules and regulations. And I found that as I was going through my list, that the states that have no early voting and restrictive absentee voting, you know, like you have to have an excuse to get an absentee ballot, I found that I was calling those for more likely, not in every case, for the Republicans, and the ones that had early voting and less restrictive absentee voting, I found I was calling for the Democrats. Not, it was interesting. I didn't look at that and say, oh, the Democrats going to win. It just sort of happened that way. So I'm going to be interested to see how my predictions turn out and if I have any reason to believe that those early voting and absentee voting rules have anything to do with it.
Just yeah, there's my, a reason
a,
that
a
Alabama.
Bit. Go ahead, sorry.
Hey, go ahead. I was going to say there's
that's
a reason.
A little bit of my argument, a little bit of my like thought going into these predictions.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Catherine. The Hill did an analysis of all 50 states from most Republican to most Democrat, or maybe another way around, And Alabama was seen as the most Republican state in the union, and that
right.
would mean that they don't probably have a lot of officials that would want to change the rules, and so that, you know, goes in line with things. Well, let's keep moving on. Arkansas has a Senate and a governor's race. I tell you what, to be fair, we can alternate back and forth. Oh, and I don't know if I made a prediction on that one, but it's kind of obvious. Unfortunately, the Democrat doesn't have much of a chance, even though he was a sitting congressman. Their Republican governor wins re-election. I believe that's Bob Riley at this time, because they've gone through several, haven't they? Bob Riley may have been the last one, and we'll go on the next one. I wanted his name. We just don't talk about Alabama as much as we used to. It's just gotten so predictable, if you will. But it's going to be a Republican hold. On to Arkansas. Now, this was seen as one of the more interesting races, one of the more important races, and we've talked at length about Arkansas Senate with Drew Pritt, among others. And I've worked for Mark Pryor. He had scared his opponent off so well last time he didn't even have really a reelection race. But unfortunately, I have to think that he's going to lose reelection because, I mean, there's just no polls showing him winning. And I don't know that Arkansas has the type of demographics that you can really work underneath the surface and fool the polls like you can in some other states. And so I just don't feel good about Mark Pryor's chances. I feel a little better about Mike Ross's chances in the governor's race. And I think he pulls that one out, but it's probably closer than it should have been. And it helps that there's a weak Republican candidate, one of the Hutchinsons, running for that, or else that one might be gone too. What are your thoughts on Arkansas?
Well, I had forgotten about the I had forgotten about the Senate race. I didn't look at that. But I think Hutchinson's going to win.
The governor's race?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Cotton and Pryor. I tell you what, I'm going to post all of my predictions on the Facebook page. In the comments, you can post all yours. I think Tim's already given me this. Either he's going to post them or I'm going to post them for him so people can see them as a comment on there. So, and, of course, we invite anybody that wants to post theirs as well. Now, of course, post them before Tuesday at, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock, because it didn't take a lot of guts to post up, you know, after half the ballots have been cast, or counted, I should say. A lot of them have been cast. But that's Arkansas. Let's go to South Carolina. That is a triple header. Man, if these races were close, South Carolina would be a fascinating state. It kind of still was because it had some primaries. Tim Scott running for re-election to his own term. I think he wins. We couldn't really get much of a candidate there.
Yeah.
We did a better job of getting a candidate in the other Senate race against Lindsey Graham, and he's pretty unpopular, but South Carolina is just, it's just a Republican year. And finally,
yeah.
Nikki Haley. I thought he ran so close, would have done better, but there's a poll recently showing that he's, you know, really struggling. So I think the Republicans, South Carolina, what's your thought?
I agree with you. That's what I had down to. I was hoping that we might be able to knock Haley out of there, but I don't think we can.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that
I heard
could
a
be
comment.
A surprise, though. That could be a surprise on election night. We'll see. Because I know there's quite a bit of work going on in South Carolina, so maybe some of that work being done on the ground will help. But so that'll be one to look at closely on election night.
Yeah, I definitely think that it, compared to Arkansas, has where you can work underneath the surface and the polls not find the work. And so there could be more of a chance of something going on there. I heard one of the best analysis. He said, you know, this, I think it was Charlie Cook saying this. He said, basically, this is a year in which you have to get Republicans to get motivated in Republican states to vote for Republican candidates in a Republican-leaning year. And he said, you know, if you look at a lot of the seats that are more blue states, they're really not doing anything that magical. It's just they're, you know, look like they're going to hold a bunch of red states. And how wonderful is that really? And so the fact that we're talking about the states we are kind of changes everything. Well, probably the most purple state of the ones we've talked about thus far, North Carolina. Catherine, how do you see that one?
I think Hagan's going to hold it.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's one of the other bright spots. I mean, on election night in the South, there's going to be a handful of states we can really say, hey, there was a win in the South, and this is going to be one of them. And just because North Carolina is a little more purple, Hagan is an incumbent that is well-liked. Her opponent has really made some mistakes along the way, including his resume, if you will, Tom Teals. And so that's a good one for us. Next one, Kentucky. And, you know, I think this is a state where if they had runoff rules like Georgia, like Louisiana, the Libertarian might could push this thing into overtime, because I don't think Mitch McConnell's going to get 50.
I don't either.
I don't think Allison London Grimes is going to be able to overtake him. I did hear about the boat arrest, boat scandal, if you will. Mitch McConnell's father-in-law, I believe it was found with cocaine on the boat, and it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cocaine. I can't imagine the man his age is maybe drug running, if you will, but not exactly what you want coming out a week before the campaign. What did you make of that story?
Yeah, I thought that hurt him, and I actually called this for Grimes.
You called it for Grimes? Catherine, I hope you're right, and I want to tell our listeners, anytime I go against the Democrat, I'd love to be wrong. But I think it is going to be one of the closer ones, but I think we lose it. I hope you're right, though, and we do win it. In a different year, I think Grimes takes this, but it's just a tough year for us.
I just think that there's been a lot of – I think Mitch McConnell has been kind of a sourpuss throughout the election. I don't think he's very likable. I think that, you know, the polling – we've talked about that race almost every week for the past year, and the polling has been up and down and up and down, and, you know, for a while there we thought for sure that he was going to win, but the more recent polling has tightened, and I think I'm optimistic about Kentucky, that's why I called it for Grimes. Now, this is an example of where they do not have early voting, and you must have an excuse to request a absentee ballot. So this is the exception to my rule.
Yeah, but I do think it's a state where voters may be a little more reliable going to the polls, no matter who they are. And so that may help a little bit smaller state. They've always had those odd year gubernatorial elections, so folks are more used to going to the ballot box during other times besides presidential years. And I saw something on Saturday Night Live, you know, that the guy doing the news tongue-in-cheek said, hey, it's not even a presidential year. It's a midterm. It doesn't even count. And unfortunately, there's so many people that actually believe that, even though the news anchor for Saturday Night Live was joking. You know, I do think this. I think Mitch McConnell, if he wins on Election Day, you know, he may win with, you know, 49% of the vote. Then in a month, they're going to do an approval rating on Mitch McConnell, and it's going to be like 38. I mean, he's going to lose, you know, 10% right off of his vote total. Not that he really had it. It's one of those cases where nobody really liked him, but they just thought, oh, she's a Democrat. She has to be worse. And they don't like either.
Oh, yeah, I don't think he wins it. She loses it.
When you're a multi-year incumbent,
no.
Can you really say, oh, he won it because then he is supposed to win? I mean, he's
right.
That's
one of the reasons that I think that he is unlikable and unliked, and so that's why I'm calling it for Grimes. And if he does win, if he does prevail, it's not because he won, it's because she lost it. That's what I think.
Okay. Next one, West Virginia Senate. We hadn't talked about this much. I think this was a race that we thought might have been close. Jay Rockefeller, if he decided to run again, you thought, well, he probably could hold that. But then Natalie Tennant, the Secretary of State, was the Democratic candidate. Shelley Capito was the Republican. And it looks like she's going to win. There's been very little polling, but the polling there was showed her in the lead, and that probably meant that there was just less polling at that point.
Catherine, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually called it for the Republican, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to be journalistically or trying to, you know, get accurate predictions, you got to call some of those. I mean, we're talking about the bastion of Republicanism if we're talking about the South. I mean, if we threw in the Pennsylvania governor's race or the two Michigan races or, you know, Minnesota Senate, you know, we'd have a little rosier picture, but we're looking at the area we're looking at for a reason because we're called the kudzu vine. Staying in one of those border states, the governor's race of Maryland, Anthony Brown's lieutenant governor, he's running against Larry Hogan, who was a state cabinet secretary, but really not a real nip-and-tuck campaign. I think Anthony Brown has been expected to win. Catherine, how do you see it?
I see it. I see Brown winning.
Yeah, and he would be, I guess, would he be the only African-American governor in the country if he does win? I mean, there are senators,
wow,
but there's not a governor at this time. I mean, there's been, I get the fellow from Massachusetts, either he's leaving, DeVal Patrick, either he's leaving office or will have already left. And so he'll be the only one, unless there's some other race I don't know about. Could be some, you know, very long shot type race that I'm not thinking of. Next one, Mississippi Senate. And, of course, you know, Thad Cochran pulled out the primary. You've got a lot of disenchanted voters that supported Chris McDaniel, and we were able to recruit in the race Travis Childers, former guest on the show, former congressman, just the best candidate we could have hoped to recruit outside of somebody named Manning, I guess, in Mississippi. And things just never seem to, you know, break for us in that race. Now, once again, not a lot of polling. I really wish that there would have been maybe a few more polls to get a better idea, but I mean, I just want to hold out hope that maybe some people just are like, I'm not going to support Thad Cochran, and then go ahead and pull Childers' name. But it would just need to be so many in a state like Mississippi. I just don't see it happening. What about you?
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. I have Cochran. I hated to write that down.
Yeah, and I mean, and
I mean,
the
just
fella,
looking at
I mean,
it and. It's Mississippi, you know. I mean, it's going to be a while before we can take Mississippi.
Well, and Mississippi is such an interesting state. It has the largest minority population, or I'm sorry, largest African-American population in the United States, but the white vote is so decidedly Republican. I mean, there's a state where, you know, in Georgia we're thinking, man, if we can get to 30, in Mississippi, sometimes they're thinking, man, if we can get to 20, you know, I mean, if they could ever figure out a formula to get more folks to vote like, you know, friends of the show like Robert Hooks and Ricky Cole, then we could have a good shot in Mississippi to win a lot of races. But they've got to figure out that key to getting a quarter to a third of the white vote and then maintaining the African-American coalition there. And then we can start winning some races in Mississippi. So, I mean, that's the magic formula, and getting it to work is totally different. Florida governor, I think we made our predictions. That was one we all agreed on, Chris. Next one, going over to Texas, Wendy Davis, one of the stars of the party, if you will, actually, I believe, had a candidate based on her political biography, loosely based at least, on the show Scandal. But I just don't know that she overcomes at least a 10-point deficit in the polls. And what is the Texas demographics? Because there you don't have near as many African-Americans. You have a lot of Latino voters, but they're just not showing up in the polls and the numbers in which they are, you know, residing in the country at this point. And so they have to be turned into voters, and that process, I think, is a little slower than people expected. And white voters, I think, are trending maybe a little more Democratic, but it's a little more, and it needs to be a bigger number. What do you think?
I'm still holding out hope that Wendy Davis wins. I wrote it down.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd love to see her win, and it would be just huge. I mean, if we were to, you know, we hold the New York governor's match, and we hold the California governor's match, and you add to that Texas, Florida, and then I think we're going to win Pennsylvania and Michigan, and, of course, I think we'd all love to have Wisconsin. I mean, we have some of the biggest states in the nation, you know, in governor's matches, and that's a huge plus for a party. And then on the Senate side, David Alamil, a dentist and businessman, is the Democratic candidate, and he is running against John Cornyn. And just to kind of tell you, when we've had, you know, Catherine Henshin on the show, we hadn't really even talked about this race because she's kind of like, let's spend our time elsewhere. So that kind of told me all I need to know on that one. So I think Cornyn holds it. What do you think?
I agree. I think Cornyn holds it.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of like the sign to end all signs on that one. And let's talk about Louisiana Senate. I think that Mary Landrieu has a plurality on Election Day, but not a majority. And this thing gets pushed. I think it's the first Tuesday in December. I want to say it's the same day Georgia's gubernatorial runoff would be. So I don't think she gets 50, but she's in there. Bill Cassidy also gets in that runoff, and we'll have plenty of time to predict that race down the road. What do you think, Catherine?
I agree. That's exactly what I wrote down. Landrieu in a runoff.
Yeah, and Bill Cassidy being the other candidate, and then we'll figure that one out in time. Tennessee, a state I almost forgot that we even had a, you know, races to talk about.
We haven't talked very much at all about Tennessee.
Well, if you listen to the show and you know you're somebody or you know somebody that you would like to come on and talk about Tennessee politics, we'd love to have you. I think we found somebody at one time, and we just never can get anybody to come on the show on a consistent basis. That's one of our real problems. But looking at those two races, they have a governor's race. They have a U.S. Senate race. The governor's race is Bill Haslam, and he's running for re-election. I don't think he's the most controversial of, you know, Republican governors. But then he's the Democrat. The Democratic candidate is Charlie Brown, and it's not the cartoon. It's a retiree, and he ran back, 12 years ago. And when you click on his website off of Politics One, it says, "Do you want to buy Charlie Brown for governor.com? I don't want to buy it. I was hoping to actually look at his website and find out more about Charlie Brown, because I know if I Google Charlie Brown, I'm going to get the Peanuts character. So, you know, I think that says all we need to know about that, Catherine. I'll let you make the first prediction on that race.
Yeah, I predicted Haslam to win.
Yeah, and then we have the U.S. Senate race. Of course, this could have gotten really interesting had the pro wrestler Kane decided to get in the primary, but he didn't. And so we have Gordon Ball, the Democratic challenger. We have Lamar Alexander, the multi-term incumbent. And we have a bunch of independents. I don't know what it is about Tennessee, just like Florida, that they recruit all these, or they attract all these libertarian and independent and everybody else candidates. But how do you see this one?
Alexander.
Yeah, me too. Alexander, he's really, as far as Republicans go, he's not the, you know, lightning rod that a lot of them are. And so if he gets through the primary, he has an easier route than most. Well, I think it's time for one of the best states, even though not because I live here, but it's just got two good races at the top of the ticket. I mean, a good pairing where both of them were within the margin of error. You know, different candidates have led throughout this thing, and there's a decent chance that we don't even know on election night. Catherine, you pick which one you want to talk about first. In addition to prediction, we might say another word about it since we got 10 minutes and we have a little more to say on it. But start us off.
Well, let's start with the governor's race, the gubernatorial race. I'm going to say that Jason Carter wins it on election night.
Without a runoff?
Without a runoff.
Okay. I think it's going to be a runoff.
I know, everybody does. Everybody but me.
And I hope you're right again, Catherine. But I do think maybe we, you know, maybe we're 48 and Dill's 47, or it could even be 49, 48.7. I mean, it may even be where the Libertarian or whomever else is on the ballot, I think it's just Libertarian, gets like 2%. Because those folks, they always poll at 7% on election day. You're like, where did more than half your vote go?
Yeah.
But it could be just that close. But I do think it is going to go into a runoff. And but while a runoff, I know people are like, well, it'll just be like the Jim Barton race. We'll go into a runoff and then just lose, you know. And, of course, we'll have plenty of time for those predictions. I do think this would feel different because Jim Martin's runoff, a lot of it seemed to be President Obama was so exciting, and this is Senator Obama at the time, and, you know, Jim Martin, in many ways, he put himself in that position, but he rode some coattails. There are really no coattails for Jason Carter or Michelle Nunn to ride. They have to get there on their own. And so I do think this is a different kind of runoff. So if they make it to a runoff, there is some victory there, even before the two runoff elections.
I also think that if the incumbent Republican governor can't win 50% plus one, it is a pretty terrible vote of no confidence. And I think that that is the sort of the message that has to be used, is that, you know, how popular is he if he can't even win? I think that it's hard to come back from that when you're Nathan Deal.
Yeah, and I think a magnifying glass then has to really be put on his record. How did he get here? And that's not good for him. I don't know if you saw, but the Carter campaigns were very interesting where they went this Saturday. Jason Carter didn't even campaign in the state. He campaigned in Jacksonville, Florida, where a good many voters in the state were for the Georgia-Florida game. I thought that was interesting but innovative, and probably more interesting and innovative is how he used his grandfather and grandmother. They were at the Hawks game, which included a T.I. rap concert, probably the first time, I dare say, that the former president and first lady attended a rap concert at halftime of the Hawks game. But they got put on camera. They didn't say, oh, well, he's here because his grandson's running for office, but of course he got recognized on the board there at the game. I actually was watching on TV. They showed him on TV. I mean, it was such an easy way to get some free publicity. I mean, there's 19,000 in the Phillips Arena. No telling how many more Georgians were watching the game. Didn't have to pay a dime for it. I guess that maybe they had to buy their two tickets. But
maybe.
But very, very good way to get some free press on election day. And you're really not wearing your grandmom and granddaddy out, because I'm sure they like to be taken in the game as well. Well, let's talk about the other side of this thing, the Senate race. Catherine, what do you see that one?
I think that goes to a runoff.
Okay. That one goes to a runoff. Now why?
I don't know.
What's the difference?
I think I don't have a. I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't have a good explanation. I think that there are some people that will vote for Amanda Swofford that wouldn't vote for Hunt.
Yeah, it may be. I'll tell you. I've talked to multiple people that already early voted and voted for Jason Carter that did not vote for Michelle Nunn, or at least didn't tell me they did. They weren't ready to brag as much that they were voting against that crook, Nathan Deal. And so I meet more voters that are more into his campaign and maybe more against Nathan Deal.
Right, which is why I don't think it's going to go into a runoff.
And so I agree with you, Catherine. I do think, even if both of them go into a runoff, I think Jason Carter has more votes than Michelle Nunn, and it may not have anything to do with the two of them. It's just that people have seen for the last year, 4 years, what Nathan Deal has done to the state of Georgia, and they can only project what David Perdue will do.
Right.
You know, they're like, well, Dollar General smells funny, but it's still open. I'm not sure that the, you know, think what he's done to Georgia, we could even keep the Dollar General open with that mismanagement. So, you know, I think that's part of the what goes on there. Now, let's talk about down ballot. We don't have to go race by race by race, but just like, where do you see a race sticking out? Like, did any of them go to runoffs? Did any incumbents get knocked off? Anything notable?
I think there's a chance, and I'm not going to call it, but I am going to be very interested to watch the Attorney General's results, because I think Sam Olens has been under fire in the last 6 weeks or so, and I think Greg Hecht has done a good job of messaging around the problems that Sam Olens has been having, and I also think that Greg Hecht has been working really hard. He's been working inside of communities that are interested in. He's been working closely with the LGBT community and talking with them about marriage equality and about other issues that are important to them. He's been talking to women about health care and access to health care. And so I think he has been working really hard, and it would not surprise me if he prevailed on election night. I don't think there's another candidate in that race. Is there? I don't think there is.
I think actually that'll be the closest of the races. Obviously the top two are going to be real close. I also think that the school superintendent race, by the way, I'll go ahead and go on, you know, say it. I do think incumbents in Georgia are so difficult to beat, whichever party they're in. So I think Sam Olens, not enough people have studied that race to vote, that may vote against Deal but won't vote against him. So I think he hangs on. And you know, I've worked for Greg Hecht. I have great admiration and will proudly cast my ballot on Election Day for him. But I do think that the school superintendent race will go into a runoff. But
is there a third candidate in there?
I thought there may be. Is there not a third candidate in that race?
Hold on.
There's not.
Keep talking.
Yeah, check for me. But I will say this. I'll still make this prediction. I would not be surprised if Valerie Wilson has the highest percentage, obviously not vote total, because the further down the ballot you get, the lower you get. But I do think that she may have the highest percentage of the Democratic candidates, because I think people that have learned anything about this race have found Richard Woods to be a little flaky, and therefore it's going to help her. And when John Barge endorsed her, I think that did get maybe a little bit of local attention in papers, the kind of folks that are going to go out and vote, and they may like, the Republican guy that has the seat now is endorsing her? What's wrong with this other guy? And so I do think that endorsement did matter a little bit. Is there a third candidate, or am I just so accustomed to talking runoff in Georgia?
My iPad is really, really slow tonight.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's go ahead and go on to the Barrow race, because there is one congressional race in Georgia that could go either way. I actually saw the Gwinnett seat polled, and the Democratic candidate, which I hadn't even heard of, that may say a little bit more about me getting out around the state, but he polled 37%, which means he might get to 40, which tells you about the changing demographics of Gwinnett County. But I do know that the John Barrow seat with Rick Allen as his challenger is more noteworthy. I do think John Barrow pulls that one out yet again, even though a poll showed him losing that thing, but that could be a wishful thinking poll. State school superintendent has a write-in, Billy Woods. I wouldn't predict that a five-digit number of people knew to even write in Billy Woods, and so I don't think that will matter much, even though there is a third candidate on that school superintendent race. So, Catherine, what's your prediction on that John Barrow race?
I think Barrow's going to hold on to it. I think it's going to be close, but I think he's going to hold on to it.
Yes. Well, and just like we predicted the Senate races in Georgia and Louisiana will go into overtime, we went to a slight overtime, but I hope it was worth it. We will post these predictions on the Facebook page before the night is out, and we will be watching on Tuesday. The election returns, and we'll come back next week and, you know, do the autopsy and talk about whichever races may be moving forward. Until then, Catherine.
Thanks a lot. Good night. Don't forget to vote if you haven't voted.
Yes.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and